How y'all doing? Real proud of you for getting up. It's that one of those rainy days, the time change, you know, you don't know if anybody's going to come to church on a day like today. And here we are with the remnant. It's amazing. Hey, I want to ask you a story. If you think back to one of the most unusual jobs you might have ever had in your life, you know, like in college, you take a bunch of crazy jobs and stuff just to make ends meet. I had an opportunity to take a crazy job. It was 30 years ago. I was student teaching at the time, kind of finishing up my degree, needed a part-time job. One of my colleagues said, hey, Cal is looking for someone to spend the night at his house. And it's like, he needs somebody to do this several nights a week. And what happened is he was divorced. His wife worked the night shift at the hospital, and my job was to go over about 10:15, make sure the kids got to bed, and then get them up in the morning for school, and then sleep. And I got paid $20 a night to sleep. It was awesome. It was way more than I was making sleeping at any other point in my life. So I kind of did the math there, and I thought about it, and I thought, I am currently making $0 a night sleeping, and I did this job. It's one of the silliest jobs I ever did, sleeping. And I did it for a few months, and it was great, $60 a week. And then fast forward to about 4 years ago, and I'm sitting on a shuttle bus, okay? I'm just taking a short little shuttle bus ride, and I'm on the shuttle bus, and we happen to be riding along to a parking lot, which was at my old junior high school. I'm a 1976 graduate of Broadmoor Junior High School, go Bruins. And it's now a vocational technical center or something like that. But here I am on the shuttle bus, and I'm sitting across from my coworkers, Joy, her husband, Brian, his brother, Rod, and we were just kind of talking. I said, hey, we're going to my old alma mater, Broadmoor Junior High School, and we kind of got talking. We all grew up in the Shawnee Mission School District. Like, where'd you go to junior high? And I went to Old Mission. Where'd you go to high school? You know, which school fed which one? They said, well, I went to North. And they asked me to go, did you go to Northwest? I said, no, but I taught at Northwest back in the last century, back in the 80s. And I said, I actually went to West. And Brian said, oh, my dad taught at West. I said, fantastic. What did he teach? He taught English. Really? What was his name? Cal. And it was like suddenly, like all of a sudden, like scales from my eyes, and it was like, oh my gosh, these are the two boys that I babysat for. And I was like, did you live on 52nd Street? And they go, yeah. And so we walked out, and I said, I'm going to tell you something really weird, but 26 years ago, I used to go to your house three nights a week and spend the night. And Brian, who was a fifth grader at that time, just kind of looked at me like a fifth grader would, like, I don't remember that at all. But Rod, who was in eighth grade, looked at me and he said, you taught me Paperback Writer on guitar. You got me into Monty Python. And I know what you're thinking. What a legacy. What a legacy for this pastor. It's amazing, I know. What can I say? But I tell that story because in this twinkling in the eyes, everything changed. I went from these two guys that I knew, and suddenly they were like the kids I babysat, and they didn't know it, and it just happened to happen that day. I want to talk about an encounter that Jesus had on the road as he was on his way to the cross. That's kind of our theme for this month. And we're going to look at the blind man of Bethsaida. And since it's daylight savings, and since we're kind of out of sorts a little bit, I'm going to have everybody stand. We'll read this together, okay? So will you stand with me? It says this, they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, and he led him outside the village. And when he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, do you see anything? He looked up and said, I see people. They look like trees walking around. Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. You can go ahead and have a seat. Fascinating passage here. Here's Jesus, teacher there in Bethsaida, just north of the Sea of Galilee. He comes across, and there's some people around this blind man. It would have been a pretty helpless time to be blind, and there's some people that bring the blind man to Jesus. Now, I don't know why he's blind. There seems to be a number of blind men in the Gospels. It could have been from injury, could have been from illness, could have been from infection. He could have just had really bad eyesight. You know, there wasn't LASIK or glasses or anything. You know, this guy just was in need. He was blind. And Jesus does something that's absolutely unusual for a teacher that day. He comes into contact with him, and he takes him to the side. Now, typically, a teacher wouldn't touch someone who had a skin disease, who was leprous, or who was lame, or who was blind. But Jesus does, and he does something very intimate. It says he spits on his eyes, and he puts his hand upon them, and he asks him if he sees anything. And one of my favorite verses in all the Bible, I see people, but they look like trees walking around. Now, if you've got kids that don't like to memorize scripture, maybe you could start with that one. I see people, but they look like trees walking around. It's a place to start. It's an unusual verse, and it's unusual in a sense because it's like Jesus doesn't quite heal him completely. Not that he's not capable or he needs to do it, but he has a second touch. He touches him again, and then it says he saw completely clearly. Here's Jesus on his way to the cross, and this is what the Son of God can do. The Son of God can do these types of things. He can make blind people see. That's what's expected. In fact, if you look in Luke, the fourth chapter, when Jesus kind of was starting his ministry, he's in synagogue, he's sitting in the back, and he comes up front to do a reading one day, and he picks up the scroll of Isaiah. And it says he goes through basically the 61st chapter, what we know is the 61st chapter. So it would have been a long time waiting as he unrolled and unrolled and unrolled this scroll, and eventually gets to this passage right here, and he says this. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began by saying to them, today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. The imagery of this person, the Messiah who's going to fulfill this thing, one of the things he does is he gives sight to the blind. In fact, there's a passage that it mirrors in Isaiah and the Septuagint and stuff, that the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures, it has this image that it's the prisoners are taken out of darkness. And if you can imagine what it would have been like to be imprisoned in that time in the darkness in a dank cell or something and suddenly be exposed to the light, how stark that difference would have been. That's what it's like to be Messiah. And the question I have, you know, in some ways is like, you know, what is the deal with all the blind people in the Gospels? There are a lot of blind people encounters in the New Testament. And one way you can kind of interpret passages in the Gospels especially is to look what's right next to those passages, what's immediately adjacent. And immediately before the blind man of Bethsaida is healed, there's a passage where Jesus is with his disciples in the boat. He's just fed 5,000, he's just fed 4,000, a couple miraculous feedings of people. And then here's the way this dialogue goes with Jesus and his disciples. It says, the disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. Be careful, Jesus warned them. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. They discussed this with one another and said, it's because we have no bread. Aware of this discussion, Jesus asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? They answered, 7. He said to them, do you still not understand? You ever heard this thought that it's so much harder sometimes to believe in Jesus, you know, in our day? Wouldn't it have been great had I been with him, like in the boat or walking along with him? Wouldn't it have been easier? And I look at the gospel record and I become convinced that that is not true, that they're in the boat with Jesus and it's as if these guys are really dense. You know, he's kind of making this metaphorical thought about the yeast of the Pharisees, and they're going, he's saying this because we don't have bread. And then he goes on that second part of that passage there. You can almost hear it this way. When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls did you pick up? 12. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls pieces did you pick up? 7. You know, oh, you know, these guys are just not getting it. They tend to not pay attention. And the thing that's very interesting in the New Testament passages is this, is that there's so many blind people because it's such a great setup. It's more than just physical blindness. It's about spiritual blindness. In fact, what happens in the New Testament is that the blind people are the ones that see. And the seeing people are the ones that are blind. The blind people are the ones that see, and the seeing people are the ones that are blind. I mean, Jesus was at his harshest with the scribes and the Pharisees. He called those people blind, the teachers. In Matthew 23, he goes through a long series of woes and kind of rails on these guys. And this is one of them right here. He says it this way. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they're full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside also will be clean. And going on, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You're like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Harsh words. The imagery that Jesus uses is a blind guide. Do you imagine going to a museum and getting a blind tour guide? And here we are, and we're in the bathroom. What's going on here? You know, this doesn't make any sense to have someone who's leading us who's absolutely blind, but this is what's happening here. Stupid Pharisees, so blind. And who could be that way? Until I think about myself, and I think, my gosh, I'm often this way. I'm often absolutely clueless and blind of things that are going on right in front of me. And this isn't only about the blind man of the side. This is about me, too. This is about me being as dense as one of the disciples and not seeing or understanding, having to be reminded. I wanted to give you a little kind of a tool for perception, and partly because I'm such a tool as well. And it's a thing called Johari's window. And it's spelled like this. It was developed in 1955. And honest to goodness, I kid you not, it was developed by two guys named Joe and Harry. And they called it Johari's window. You can look it up. Look it up on Wikipedia, I guarantee. But it's a little matrix. A little window, a four-paned window. And I'm going to recreate it here because I think it's very instructive. It can be useful for us. In this side of it is me. And these are the things that are known by me, and these are the things that are unknown by me. Over here on this side is others. These are the things that are known by others, and these are the things that are unknown by others. So if you think about this matrix, real simply, there are the things that are known by me and known by others. This is my public self. This is the realm of authenticity. This is where I can be real. This is where what you see is what you get. WYSIWYG. You ever heard of WYSIWYG? Where it seems the same like on the computer and the printer? It's actually a quote from Flip Wilson's show, Geraldine. What you see is what you get. It's really where it came from. WYSIWYG. Okay, here it is. That's my public self right there. We'd love this to be the whole dang window, wouldn't we? But the truth is, it's not. It's not the whole dang window. There's other parts of me. So parts of me that are unknown to me but are known to others are blind spots. These are the things that everyone else is quite aware of and we are completely clueless about. These are the things that show up sometimes. Like I remember 20 years ago, I was playing frisbee golf with a friend, and we got to about the 15th hole, and he said, "Jim, I never realized you were so competitive." And it's like, is that showing? You know, I'm just Mr. Friendly, Happy-Go-Lucky guy. He's seeing something that I don't think is being shown at all. Have you ever ruined a board game in that competitiveness? I've ruined a board game or two on that. Where this kind of blind spot shows up. Or have you ever had it where, you know, in my marriage, so today's my anniversary, it's my 29th anniversary today. Hi, honey. He looks so young. Marriage is kind of this exercise in, hey, guess what? You get to find out all your blind spots. And we'll share them with one another in love. And then you add kids to it, and they're just, Dad, you don't get what's going on here, you know? And it's a hard thing to have these blind spots, but we all do. We all do the things in our life that once we leave the room, everyone is rolling their eyes. You are not paying attention to the situation here. You completely misread the emotional content of what's happening here. You are insensitive again. It just keeps happening. So this is part of me. Then there's this other part here, which is what I would say is hidden. And I say there's two aspects to this. There's one aspect that's pretty good. It's where wisdom lies, is that we don't share every thought we have. We have a private life. We don't say everything we ever think. Thank goodness. There was that movie, that Ricky Gervais movie, where people said everything that came to their mind. It's not a good thing. It really isn't. But then there's another aspect of the hidden life, and that's the secret. And this is where kind of shame can reside in our lives. This is where things that control us, maybe addictions, maybe the things that are destructive in our lives, maybe the things that we wouldn't want anyone in the world to know at all about us. And sometimes as this area of our life never gets under control, it can take up the whole thing. It can consume the whole person. And lastly, there's this world of the unknown. It's the world that's mysterious. The world that's below our consciousness. And this is the world of God, too. The divine. What could be. What is outside of our perception. I want to come back to this. But I want to also think about two aspects of the seeing and the blind man who sees. And what does he see? And I think there's two aspects of it. The passage in Mark that we're kind of taking some of our stories as we go on the way to the cross, there's two blind men stories. And if you think about too what it's adjacent to, the first blind man, the blind man beside us sees. And the next passage is this, is that Jesus encounters Peter, and Jesus asks Peter the question, who do you say that I am? And Jesus said, Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, you are right, Simon Peter. And upon this rock I will build this church. What does the blind man see? What comes next is that Jesus is Messiah. He knows it in his head, but he doesn't fully understand it. It's almost like the blind man of the Sidon who needs a second touch. Because Peter, what Isaac spoke about last week, is that he didn't understand the full measure of what it would cost and the suffering. And in fact, he rebukes Peter and says, "Get behind me, Satan." There's another blind man story a few chapters later, and that's blind Bartimaeus. This one's a little bit different. Blind Bartimaeus is by the side of the road, and he is calling out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And the folks around him are kind of going, "Shh, go quiet." And he cries all the louder, and Jesus comes up to him, and he heals Bartimaeus. Bartimaeus is healed completely of his sight. Didn't take two times that time. And it says he follows Jesus on the road. And the next thing that happens is Jesus comes into Jerusalem in the triumphal village. He's recognized and lifted up as a coming king, as the Messiah. That is also what is seen. And that for us is the first thing that we absolutely do need to see is who Jesus is. Who Jesus is in our lives and also who he is in the universe. That he's the master of the universe. That he is the creator, he's the one who created us, he loves us, and that we have to get our sight right. We have to see Jesus for who he is in that. How is it that we can, in a sense, become a more authentic person, a more together person? What can we do? How can our vision increase so that these areas that are blind spots or that are hidden can grow? And I believe we can grow in those things. I don't know if you're like me, but when I have a blind spot pointed out to me, I usually have this feeling. Awesome! That rocks! No, I don't have that feeling. I have this feeling. Again? Like, really, again? I thought that I learned that a couple years ago. I thought I kind of got over that. I thought that I was a much more sensitive and caring person than I was in that moment. And I think it's only in community, like the blind man and Bethsaida had the community, that we can gain ground in these areas. So the safety of a marriage or a family relationship or friendship, that others can kind of make us aware of these blind spots, and they don't have to become blind spots anymore. It's something that can't happen without community. You can't just go up to a stranger and go, "Hey, well, let me tell you about a couple blind spots you have, and then we'll be best friends." It just isn't going to happen. You have to have others around you who love you and care for you deeply, and then this thing can kind of get worked on in our lives. We all have them. And then secondly, this area that's hidden, the area of addictions, the area of secret, the area of stuff that we're ashamed of, that we don't know what to do with, it's only in the safety of community. The folks that meet with others, like in a AA group or a 12-step group, or the folks who are brave enough to meet in our Shame No More group, who get together and share this stuff that's been hidden and get it out in the light, they find something that happens. Brené Brown says it so well in The Gifts of Imperfection. We think if the stuff that's hidden and we're ashamed of in our life, that we're vulnerable about, we think if we share that vulnerability, that we will be rejected, that we will be cast aside. But the very opposite happens, that someone hears that thing and they go, "Oh yeah, me too." It actually draws people together closer when you're able to share that vulnerability, when you're able to share that weakness, when it doesn't have to be hidden anymore. There's a burden that's relieved. And so in this way, this public self can begin to grow. We can grow and heal as people. And I think the other thing that's, too, fascinating to me is the unknown and how God continues to work all this stuff in our life. And we behold and we trust the mystery of how he works and know that God isn't done with us yet. So one of the things about blindness, about the blind man of Bethsaida, is how he sees, who he sees Jesus as. Our vision can be restored in how we see ourselves. And I also think there's a vision that Jesus has for us to be healed and whole. I want you to look back at this passage in Isaiah. It's Isaiah 6. It says it this way. Go and tell this people, be ever hearing, but never understanding. Be ever seeing, but never perceiving. Make the heart of this people callous. Make their ears dull and close their eyes. Otherwise, catch this, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed. It's more than just mental assent. It's more than just knowing, okay, he's the Messiah. It's trusting our lives to him in such a way and also actually believing that he can put us back together, put us back whole, restore all this stuff, expand our public self, expand our authentic person, expand our true self. It's only in the safety that we can do that. But I'd like to look at it this way. You know, God doesn't really work with a matrix here. This is what God sees. He sees the whole shebang. He sees all of it. He knows us in our unknown ways. He knows us in the areas that we continue to stumble and yet accepts us still, works with us, forgives us. He sees these ways and we are broken, and he wants us to turn to him and be healed and be whole and be restored. He absolutely wants this. But I think sometimes, too, we let these little things that become big things, and so they control our life, and I think it limits us. But have you ever thought about how God sees you? What he wants for you as a person? What he wants your life to be like? I think it's so much more than we sometimes imagine. It really is. And he can handle that. We're loved by God. He wants us to be healed and whole. My encouragement for you is this weekend to think about seeing. To think about seeing Jesus as the one who holds you in his arms. To think about Jesus as the one who wants to heal and restore you and increase your vision. May that happen. Will you pray with me? Lord, if there was ever a time to confess that I was blind, it's now. I do need you. And Lord, there is nothing to be ashamed of to say, Lord, I can't see. I pray that you would give us courage. You'd give us courage to face the parts of our life that are disappointing, our blind spots. I pray, too, that you would give us courage to face the hiddenness and the secrets in our life that can be so debilitating. I pray that we would have brothers and sisters who could come alongside and act on your behalf to let us know that we're loved and accepted and forgiven. That, Lord, in that unknown realm, there's so much that you want for us. Pray that we could see that. Pray that our lives would have that expanding vision. We thank you for the story of the blind. Help us to be blind people that are learning to see. Amen. Hey, I want to remind you, if you would like prayer after the service, there are folks who'd be glad to pray with you. They're back in our prayer chapel. And I want to remind you, too, to lift your face as you're seen by God. Let me speak a blessing over you. The Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you. The Lord lift his countenance up on you and give you peace both in this life and in the life everlasting. Amen. Will you join hands as we sing our benediction?